fight the fight. We are here to equip you. Because you love the truth, LibertyRadioLive.com.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
Good morning and welcome to the Monday, April 13th, 2009 edition of the Investigative Journal. My guest today is a member of the legal team of a group called the CPS Watch Group, and we're going to revisit the Tony Alamo story. And I just want to make sure my guest is on. Cheryl, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, this is Cheryl from the CPS Watch legal team. And Cheryl, we're here. I've covered the Tony Alamo ministry story, for many years now, in fact. And I followed this story closely ever since they were raided in stormtrooper-like fashion, and a number of their children have been, when I say kidnapped, by the Department of Children and Family Services in Arkansas. Recently, the latest in the story is there's been a federal lawsuit filed to enjoin the Arkansas Department of Human Services from disrupting its operation as an organization by harassing its members and using the unlawful seizure of children to shut down the church. Could you introduce yourself, Cheryl, and tell us about your group and how you're helping the Alamo ministry?
Sure. I'm Cheryl Barnes. I'm the litigation specialist on the team, and we're doing a federal injunction to enjoin the state from removing children based on association. Their removal order, even of the children they don't have yet, is just based on their association with the church, and that violates the Constitution. So we're asking the federal court to say that they cannot remove those children just because of their association with the ministry, that they have to find particular abuse for each child.
Okay, and how did you get involved with the Alamo ministry?
About 6 years ago, I worked a similar case called Heartland Ministries in Missouri, where they had came and taken all the children from the church in the same sort of fashion, and we filed an injunction in that case and got all the kids back. And so they had sought us out and found us.
You know, that's interesting. Tell us a little bit about that case. It was the Heartland Ministry 6 years ago. What city in Missouri was that?
Hannibal, Missouri.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about what they did to that ministry and how you helped them. Go ahead.
That ministry has, like, homes for troubled youth, for troubled teenagers, and they have levels of discipline. And the highest level, you'll have to work on their dairy farm, shoveling manure. And six kids had to shovel manure on the dairy farm. The state felt that was abuse, and so they came and took 140 kids out. They came with school buses, shotguns, and dogs, and they lined all the kids up in the church school gymnasium and made them put down their books and everything and file them onto the buses.
And did they take them into custody and put them in the foster homes?
Yes. But it only
and was there
six,
any...
It only
Go
lasted
ahead.
6 days, because in that case we got involved right away, you know, whereas this case some time has gone by.
And there was no finding of abuse outside of children having to work on the dairy farm and shoveling manure. That's interesting. I grew up on a dairy farm and shoveled manure many days in my life as a young kid. So I guess I was a victim of child abuse by my dad, according to Children and Family Services, correct?
Right. Well, they took all the kids because of the belief by the church that shoveling manure was appropriate. And that's mm-hmm. where we get into really dangerous waters, is punishing people for thought or for holding a particular set of beliefs. For example, a lot of people might feel like marijuana should be legal, but we can't put them in jail unless they're actually smoking it or selling it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can't take people's children away because they hold a set of beliefs that are unpopular, even illegal. We can't remove their children because of their beliefs unless they're abusing their children.
Right. Now, in the case of the Heartland Ministries, where you returned the children to their homes, there was no finding of abuse outside of what you just told us. Now, the analogy in the Alamo Ministry is similar. What we found, there was a hearing, I'm sure you're aware of, when the judge ruled that really the only thing he could find was that they weren't properly signed up for homeschooling and some type of medical abuse because of not vaccinating children. Now, we know the horrors of vaccinations, and many people do not vaccinate their children. I don't believe these are grounds for abuse, do you?
No. In fact, Arkansas state law says that there's a religious exemption. Arkansas has one of the broadest exemptions. They have religious exemption and a personal exemption. A lot of states don't have the personal exemption. And even though the parents have filed their exemption forms, the state isn't accepting those from them, and they're still vaccinating their children.
So the parents basically have followed Arkansas state law by filing their exemption forms, which means that they don't need to vaccinate their children. Then the judge says the children are medically deprived because they don't receive vaccinations. I believe that's an easy decision for appeals court to, or a federal judge to overturn the judge's ruling, don't you?
Yes, it would be an easy decision for appeal. You get into tricky waters in federal court. The federal court could not review a state court jurisdiction. So when we're mm-hmm. going into federal court, we're asking them to find that DHS is acting beyond the court order. For example, they're removing newborns. They're making the pregnant women tell them when they're due and saying they're going to take their newborns. And they're doing a deprogramming plan where they're having the children go to other churches and trying to indoctrinate them into a new religion. So our argument in federal court, we're trying to say that we're not asking them to review a state court order because we're just saying that the DHS has gone beyond the scope of that order.
Right. Tell us a little bit about when this case was filed and the attorney representing the Alamo Ministries and the children now.
Okay. It was filed last Wednesday, and our attorney, Philip Kuhn, he's been practicing civil rights for over 40 years. He's the oldest civil rights lawyer in America. And he worked even like in the Martin Luther King days on some of those kinds of cases. So he's really brilliant, and it's a pleasure to work with him. We all kind of worked together on drafting the pleadings, and just because I had done one of these kinds of cases before.
Now, did you contact him, or did he contact you to get involved with the case? How did that operate? How did that work? How did he hear about this case?
Desiree, our team coordinator, she connected us all up.
Okay.
We've worked with Philip a lot in other cases.
All right. Tell us a little bit more about what you think happened here in the Alamo case. Why you've come to their aid. I know that you're, I think people don't even know about your group in Florida. Tell us a little bit about that as well.
Okay, my CPS Watch is actually in Missouri, and I founded it in 1997. My son was taken away from me because I refused to apply for Medicaid. An appellate court later ruled that they had no grounds to take my son from me. But while he was in foster care, he suffered a skull fracture, hip fracture, four fracture grid, and he's now permanently brain injured and legally blind.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's the time that I founded CPS Watch, because there was nothing for parents. I spent all my time in the library trying to figure out what to do or who to call, and there was really nothing. And then I wrote
Now, this occurred in Missouri in 1997 when they took your child?
Yes.
And how old was your child at the time?
At birth. The hospital took him because I wouldn't apply for Medicaid. But
okay,
we had insurance,
so you don't...
and our insurance
right.
paid the bill.
So you had insurance. You covered, you know, you had your baby in a hospital in Missouri. Where in Missouri, by the way?
We had our baby in Wichita, Kansas, but we were living in Missouri.
So in 1997, you have a child in Wichita, Kansas. You have proper medical insurance. You're able to take care of your child. You refuse to sign up for Medicaid. The state takes your baby. Later, your baby is mistreated in foster care, has a skull fracture, and other things occur to him when he was mistreated. He still has brain damage because of this.
Right.
And you find CPS Watch legal team, correct, to deal with these abuses. Wow, what a story. I really feel sorry. I'll tell you, that just breaks my heart to hear that happen. Tell us, though, after this occurs, how long did it take you to get justice? I know you have your child back now, but tell us a little bit about what you did to finally get your child back.
It took 22 months, and an appellate court ruled that they had no grounds to even investigate that sort of a case. And he was all the abuse happened in the first 6 weeks, but it took 22 months. And at that time, I didn't even own a computer, had never been on the Internet. I was just at the library all the time trying to learn what to do. And I wrote a book in 2000 called The Parent's Guide to the System to kind of give basic information. That was my goal.
Can people still get this book?
Yes, you can get it online.
And could you tell us where people can get it and give us the title?
It's The Parent's Guide to the System. If you just do a Google search, you'll find it.
Okay, The Parent's Guide to the System. You can do a Google search to get that. Okay, that's an incredible story. Tell us then exactly how CPS Watch was founded by you, and then how it's grown since 1997. And what, you know, if we could go through this and tell us, you know, I followed the problems of child services around this country, have had numerous parents on who've lost their children. Does this all, before we get into how your organization operates and what you've done over the years, do you think this all stems from what Bill Clinton did when he was in office, when he passed that federal law encouraging state organizations to take children because they receive some type of financial gain, don't they, or bonuses by the number of children they get in from the feds, don't they?
Yes. Well, actually, the states don't get any federal money unless children are in foster care. So even though federal law requires family preservation services, they have to pay for that with their own state money, which is why they never do it. And then,
so basically, this leads to abuse, don't you think? I mean, when there's a financial, it's almost like a bounty from the federal government put onto these children's heads, don't you think?
Absolutely. And in many states, like in Missouri, the latest data report showed that 66% of the cases ended in termination of parental rights, but only 28% found abuse. And that's pretty common in all states where the termination, where they will find no abuse, but they still go on to terminate their rights.
Right. And so you find this to be a widespread problem all over the country, correct?
I do. And with this, I'm particularly concerned with this mass removal issue because Arkansas collaborated with Texas to try to find out what they did wrong in the FLDS removal and try to construct their case so that it would survive legal scrutiny. And the troubling thing about that is if you wanted to, I feel like they're trying to make one mass removal stand because then that will give them grounds to remove all kids based on beliefs, based on association. So if they can find the worst or the most controversial church and go and take all their kids, and if they can just make one of those cases stick, they will have set a precedent to start removing kids from any church for any reason. And anything can be abused. Just the fact that they believe in corporal punishment would put them at risk of excessive punishment one day, or the fact they don't believe in television, or they don't believe in school, so they're denying this child a public education. Like, where this could lead is endless, and it's a really dangerous trend that they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, go ahead.
I feel particularly concerned because the states are all collaborating with each other, and it seems to be a huge effort to make a mass removal stand.
What do you think the motivation is behind the scenes? I have my thoughts on that based on the people I've interviewed and based on things that I've researched regarding this issue. But what do you think is motivating this kind of draconian move? It's almost like as reminiscent to what was going on in Nazi Germany back during World War II. What's your thoughts about this? And I, first of all, want to applaud you for getting involved in helping these people, as I know many of them personally over the years covering their story. And I've said many times that we need to address this, and I'm glad you got involved because I know a lot of people felt there was nowhere to go. They were almost being, they were having their children used against the ministry and themselves because of their beliefs. And it's basically so unconstitutional, it just stares you right in the face. But go ahead, Nan, if you could tell me what you think the motivations are behind the scenes here. I know the states are getting together, like you said, but why?
Well, I can only speculate on that. You know, I don't know what makes them do what they do, but it's pretty well established that people that have strong religious beliefs or strong family ties are the most difficult to manage. For example, when there were prisoners of war, they would be questioned about their family ties and their religious beliefs, and people that had strong loyalties were placed in maximum security because they were more likely to try to escape. And the other thing is, you know, it seems like we're going to a trend, you know, more of a socialist-type society, and the people that are blocking all that from happening are the churches and the religious people. And it seems like if you could manage them somehow, the government would be more free to do the things they want to do.
Yeah, good point. That's a good analogy. And tell us, you know, with your conversations with the Alamo Ministry, and basically based on what's happened so far, I have not been able to find, you know, through the people that I've talked to prior to this gag order where they no longer can speak on this show or give, you know, their side of the story, because the judge has basically said, if you talk about this case, we're going to put you in jail. Three of the family members are in jail. Is this going to be covered in the case as well? Is Mr. Kuhn going to work on trying to get these people out of jail, the three or four parents that are in jail right now because of this case?
Well, if the injunction were granted that says you can't remove the children based on association, then there'd be no reason to continue keeping them in jail for not telling where their kids are.
Right.
So it should indirectly help them.
Right.
At the time when we're ready to call witnesses, we've asked the lower court to allow those people to testify in federal court. If they refuse, then we'll go through the federal court. There is case law that says a state court cannot gag a person from testifying in federal court. And we'll go
Are there any time frames now when there's going to be the first hearing in federal court? And where is this going to be held? What federal court? Is this the U.S. District Court in Western Arkansas?
Yeah, in Texarkana.
We
have to have them served, and then they have 30 days to respond. So we're thinking about a month. Nothing will happen. I think they've all been served already. And so about a month before anything at all happens. Our request is for a preliminary injunction, meaning the judge grants the injunction before he actually hears the case, just based on our pleadings.
Right. And this will also, in a sense, help Tony Alamo. You know, he's being held on charges of a violation of the Mann Act. He's been in jail since September. This is a separate case, but so closely related to this that I can't see how a favorable ruling by the federal court won't also help Mr. Alamo vindicate himself or at least present a defense that can get the truth out about his side of the story. Don't you agree?
That's possible.
Okay.
I'm not that familiar with this criminal case, though.
Yeah, and that's a separate issue that we can deal with at another time in the show, and we have. Tell us a little bit. We're going to, you know, spend in the next half hour. I want to go in depth into what you've learned over the years with this organization, how it's grown. But I may add that now you're based where, in Florida or in Missouri right now?
I'm in Missouri. Mr. Kuhn and Desiree are in Florida.
Okay, so you have a number of people. I talked with Desiree over the phone, and she said she has dedicated her life to this cause, as well as you have. And I've had people on my show that said if we're ever going to get any changes in this system, it's going to be up to the mothers in this country to stand up for their children's rights and to also encourage the men involved to stand up for their children and their wives. Otherwise, there's really no hope. What's your thoughts about that?
Well, that's absolutely true. And more importantly, people have to unite. What I find going on in the public is they're like, well, that church is weird. And, you know, they should take their kids. They're all strange, and they do these strange things. And they really don't see, they don't envision how that's going to turn around and come against them someday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically it's this mentality that you believe anything that the state and your government tells you, and if they've taken their children, there must be something wrong. So they've already accused the find them guilty prior to any kind of hearing. And the sad thing about this is the state has so much authority, they can take these children without really any probable cause to do so, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and like I said, I feel like they're just trying to make one of these stick, and, you know, they targeted the FLDS. I don't think they thought they were going to get the public support that they did, and that didn't work out, and now they're targeting...
Now, what group was that, FLDS?
The FLDS in Texas.
Okay, now when did this occur? Just to refresh my memory,
my gosh,
as well, because
a year and a half ago, probably.
Okay, well,
tell
us a
little bit. I worked on that case some too, and I would be surprised that people would say, you know, if I would say I'm doing the FLDS case, people would say, "Well, do you believe in that? Do you believe in polygamy?" And you know, I would explain that's irrelevant. What I believe, you cannot just go and take people's children if they're not being abused.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like Americans don't have much critical thinking skills to evaluate a situation. And that's where I really feel like we're going to fail, because everybody won't stand together and say you can't take the kids unless they're abused. Even if everything they say about Tony Alamo is true, it's not grounds to remove those children because they haven't been abused and there's no danger they're going to be immediately.
Exactly. I mean, we're looking at an issue here where these, you know, and then I've had many parents of the same, before they were this gag order, people who've been with his ministry for 40 years stating that if any of this occurred with Alamo, they would have pulled their children out of that ministry right quick, and they never did. So many of all the parents have stood behind Tony and said this is a trumped up charge. I don't know if you're aware, but I've had on my show a former FBI agent named John Peeler, who back in the 90s was assigned to find anything they could on the Alamo ministry, and to the extent of do anything they could to plant drugs, to plant weapons, to get him to take weapons, to do anything to bring down the ministry. When the investigator, the FBI agent, went back to his boss and said, "We can't find anything on this man, he's clean, so are his people there at the ministry," they decided to trump up a tax charge on him, and he spent 4 years in jail for that. Came out, and the ministry grew even larger. And Peeler then left the FBI over this. It said it was his last case. He couldn't take it anymore. And began to tell people about what happened there. He came on my show recently and said that they were going to set him up in the 90s. And since they didn't succeed in destroying the ministry then, they were going to do it again. And he said the same thing is going on now. And although he wasn't privy to this raid, he said that he knows definitely, because of the way it was conducted, alerting the media all over prior to the raid, that they're trying to set up the ministry just like they did in the 90s. That, although is only circumstantial evidence, I believe it's important that people understand that this occurred once before. And it's almost as if they have a vendetta on this ministry, basically because what you said, of their strong religious beliefs, right?
Right. And it's happening to other places. There's the Reclamation Ranch in Alabama. They took all the kids there. They had done FLDS. They did the Heartland. It appears that they're targeting churches. And like I said, I can only guess as to why. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. That's a question I have, too.
You know what we'll do is, in the next, we're going to come across, we have a 3-minute break coming up here shortly, and then we'll come back and discuss some cases that you've worked on over the years, also talk about some of the abuses that I've seen with people that have been on my show from Florida across to California, as well as maybe answer that question for you with a statement that was made by Pope John Paul II, believe it or not, back in the 90s, which may lead some more and give you some more information on really what's going on behind the scenes in America, and why perhaps this story brings us one step closer to understanding what this one world government, one world religion that we hear about in the news, at least in the alternative news, regarding the New World Order and the loss of the rights in America. We'll be back with Cheryl Barnes in 3 minutes on the Investigative Journal. Okay, we're back on the Investigative Journal. My guest is Cheryl Barnes. She's founded the CPS Watch Legal Team, an organization dedicated to uncovering the abuses of the state child family services organizations, showing how so many children have been really been kidnapped and then seriously injured, including her own child, her son Taylor, who was taken from her after birth and then abused in a foster care, which led Cheryl to founding this organization, a worthwhile organization. We need to stick together, folks, on this issue. We're going to tell you how you can get a hold of Cheryl if you are listening or if you know anyone who's had their children abused by this system. And I want to say this before I get back to Cheryl, that in the press release that was released on the Tony Alamo case, where now the CPS Watch team, this group founded by Cheryl, is getting together with Mr. Kuhn, Philip Kuhn, a well-respected civil rights lawyer, to defend to defend these children in federal court and enjoin the state of Arkansas from what they claim to be and what is really illegal activities, kidnapping at the highest level, mass kidnapping of children, and what we're searching in this show of what's really behind it. Desiree, who works with I talked on the phone over the weekend, who works with Cheryl, provided this information in the press release. And let me read it for you. She says, Desiree Howard says, and she is the executive director of Families Best Interest and CPS Watch Legal Team Coordinator, said April is National Child Abuse Month. And she said that this is a great month to prevent children from being abused in any situation, including children are being abused in foster care by the very persons sworn to protect them. Once again, officials have painted with too broad a brush. These parents have spent thousands of hours attempting to satisfy the state's demands while being met with workers who merely pay lip service to the court's goal of reunifying the children. The person who is accused of prospective abuse is in jail, awaiting a trial. He is presumed innocent until proven guilty. The department has a duty, mandated by federal law, to protect children using the least restrictive means. The DHS had many options to help these families of their children without removing them from their homes. They chose not to. They made bad decisions. They have hurt these families. We hold them accountable and will hold them accountable. DHS thinks that they are above the law and have no accountability to the citizens of Texarkana and the state of Arkansas. Since we have been here with other parents since we hear other parents have come out of the woodwork describing abuses perpetrated by local DHS offices all around the country, secret hearings and gag orders do not serve the children of this state and any other state in this union, and instead serve only to protect the illegal actions of a government. A true democracy is the cornerstone of America, one that is transparent to the citizens it serves and accountable for their actions or lack thereof. Copies of this complaint that's filed in federal court and its attachments are available by sending a request to, and let me give this out, Desiree, D-E-S-E-R-E, at cpswatchlegalteam.com. So if you're interested in reading the entire complaint filed on behalf of the Alamo Ministries, you can email D-E-S-E-R-E, that's Desiree, at cpswatchlegalteam.com. Okay, Cheryl, let's get back to your organization. Tell us how widespread these abuses are. Give us some examples of people you've worked with besides the ministries. We've talked about the Alamo Ministry, where over 30 children have been taken into custody. Other ministries like it, who have had the same kind of fascist type of action taken against them. But tell us how widespread this is around the country and give us some examples.
It's extremely widespread. And always whenever you speak to someone first involved, they're always amazed that this is happening and this is uncommon, and we explain, yes, very common. Children being abused in foster care and murdered is a huge ordeal. Statistically, children are 10 times more likely to be abused in foster care, and they're murdered 5.3 times more often in foster care than in their own homes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big financial incentive to not only foster but to adopt children, because you get a subsidy until they turn 18. So, like in Missouri, you can get $800 a month until the child turns 18. And so if you go, if you do foster care,
who
like...
get $800 a month? That's a foster care parent on each child?
No, as an adopter.
Okay. Go ahead. Continue.
And if you foster children, you can only have 6, but if you adopt, you can have, 20.
Mm-hmm.
There's no limit, and each of those children come with a subsidy. So we're frequently reading cases where children are killed, and the people have, 10, 12, 17 kids, and they're all adopted, and they're living in cages or tied up or things of that nature, because it just creates a huge incentive. If you went and adopted 3 kids, you would make more money than you make working. And that's, dangerous.
And you would think that the state, now they take a child, and I've seen this occur in many cases. Let me give you an example of someone who was on my show. His name is Greg Pound from Florida. Now, Greg has and his wife were a Christian family. They were living in Florida. I'm going back 4 years now, because they haven't seen their children in 4 years. Now, let me tell you what happened to him. And he basically was living he had a job, he had a home. His wife was a teacher. And they had three young children. They brought up their family. They had no problems. I mean, there was never any questions of abuse. They didn't have any criminal record. They didn't use drugs. They didn't drink. They were clean as a whistle. And one day, his sister-in-law came over from Michigan with a dog, and they were visiting. Now, the sister-in-law brought the dog, and unfortunately, the dog was excited and accidentally bit one of the children. Now, Greg Pound does the right thing. It was a dog bite on the child, takes the child to the hospital. At that particular juncture, a complaint was filed by the hospital or something, why it was filed, because the bite wasn't that serious. The child was taken home. And the next thing you know, Greg Pound said, authorities came to his door and removed all his children. It's been 4 years now. And basically what happened to his wife after that, about a year after this occurred, and they were going through this legal matrix, she was pregnant, and they wanted to take her other child that wasn't even born yet. So she vanished. She now has a warrant out for arrest still, because she refuses to turn over that child. So here we have, over a simple dog bite, 3 children who have been taken from their parents for 4 years. And get this, they've been abused in foster care, and Greg can prove it. But every time he tries to do it, they put him through hoops again and threaten to arrest him, and have in the past. I don't know if you're aware of this particular case, but there's so many like this. Amazing, isn't it?
Right, exactly. And there are a lot like that. The thing is, they build a case, even if they didn't have one on the initial complaint. Once they get there, they build a case. Most people let them in and think they'll just answer these questions and clear this right up. Well, the minute they're in your house, they're taking notes and writing things down. They take everything you say out of context. And then suddenly they have a bunch of evidence.
And so Greg Pound's case, he's been on my show. He has a website called SaveTheChildren.com, and you can read many other cases like this. I remember one that sticks out in my mind is a mother who refused to have her daughter go to a school dance. The next thing you know, her daughter complains to a counselor, and the next thing you know, her daughter's in foster care, and this woman didn't see her daughter for several years as well, based on the fact of just disciplining her child, not wanting to go. This is just absurd. And I'm sure you've heard of cases like this. Tell us what type of cases you're working on now, and from what states in the country have you been helping people?
We have some other federal suits in Florida that are pending, and then I do cases in Missouri, Ohio. I will go anywhere to help people if I'm able to. At one time, our organization had 12,000 members, and we published a full-color magazine, and we had an enormous website with lots of legal forms. Well, the government had come to my house, and over a report of a broken toilet, and we were filming them, they broke in, this was in 2003, they broke into our house, and they arrested me for not letting them in without a warrant, and then they arrested my 16 and 15-year-old for not turning off the video camera. Well, then they took everything, all the computers and all the cameras and the VCRs and every CD. And then the next day, our website had a virus and crashed. And so we had no backups or anything, and I didn't, you know, put it back up because we didn't have the funding to continue to do that kind of stuff. You know, that's basically what it has amounted to. But we still have, like... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, your organization grows to 12,000 strong, and that was 2003. Then you see government harassment against you for trying to help people, correct?
Right.
And then your website is mysteriously infected. Well, you know, America, what do we have to do? I mean, listen to what Cheryl's telling you. And don't you think this woman deserves some justice? I mean, don't you think other women in the same position, I just think how you'd feel. If your son or daughter were taken to you at birth because you didn't want to take Medicaid when you had perfect insurance to begin with. Amazing story. And then they harass you for creating this organization. So tell us how that story ended. What happened after they arrested you?
Well, the head of the state for Missouri, of DFS, refused to take my children into custody. So the police can take children for up to 72 hours, but then the DFS said we're not taking her kids into custody, so they had to just release them. Then I was charged with obstruction of government operations. That case was dismissed. I did a motion to dismiss, basically, that says you can't obstruct government operations unless they're operating according to the law or policy. That if they're breaking the law, you cannot be obstructing that. And that was, you know, pretty much the end of it. In that case, my children spent the night in jail, though, and they were released the next day with no charges.
Yeah, and so basically, were they successful in maybe disrupting your organization for a time? And what's happened with your organization since then?
We still do the email group, and we take phone calls and things like that, but we haven't put our website back up. We're working on it now. Our website was thousands of pages, and it took me like a year and a half to build because I'm not very good at web design. I'm just a little bit good. And I couldn't really just redo it without the backups or anything.
Well, listen, maybe there's somebody out there that's computer savvy that may want to help you. How can people get in touch with you?
My number is 417-334-2405. And then you can email us. You can go to the legal team site, cpswatchlegalteam.com. And my email is Cheryl@cpswatchlegalteam.com.
Yeah, and maybe there's somebody out there that would like to assist with their computer experience to help you get another site up. And since the 2003 raid, has your group kind of dismantled? Has a lot of people lost interest, or did that scare people? What happened?
Some people, like, we don't have the funding to do our magazine. When we published the magazine, it was really a huge success because the legislators would use it a lot. And we don't have funding like that we did at one time. I'm surprised at how the group kind of still hangs around. You know, there's like 400 people on our email list, and there's really nobody to pick it up. There's other kind of groups, but there's nobody that did what we did and had the resources that we had. And I've always been, you know, kind of surprised at how they will speak of me, you know, so highly. And I have this kind of confession, I guess. I've tried to really get out of doing this kind of stuff, and I feel like God makes me come back to it because I have 14 children. I don't know if I mentioned that.
You have 14?
I just really want to raise my kids and be left alone like everyone else.
You have 14. You've given birth to 14 children?
Mm-hmm. 12 wow. boys in a row and then two
That's
girls.
That is a full-time job in itself. And I, amazing, amazing story.
But and it seems like every time I turn my back on this cause, something will happen that will pull
that
me back
That will bring you
it.
Back to do it. Right. Now, you have Philip Kuhn that helps, works on cases. Do you ever need other lawyers to help? Do you ever need anybody to lend their legal assistance? Because I'm sure it's not very popular. Do you ever need anybody else to help you?
Yes, sometimes. We need lawyers usually that are willing to do the cases. I do most of the research, and I'm pretty good at it, but I'm not a lawyer, so I can't. File the cases.
Yeah, if ever, you know, we should keep in touch because I'm personal friends with an attorney who, his name is John Levy, and John is a California attorney. Prior to him being an attorney, he worked in child family services there and understands it quite well. And he may be somebody you can call upon to help. As well, I have a law degree. If you ever need any help researching, let me know, okay?
Okay, that's awesome. Thanks.
And I will contact you through email. But if you ever need any help, John Levy is always there to talk with and to assist people. I know him personally. He takes on some really interesting cases, civil rights cases around the world, and other type cases against this type of abuse and other cases that extend even into the halls of the Vatican. We did mention that at the break, and I wanted to say this quickly. That in the 90s, I picked up a quote by John Paul II, and he mentioned this. He said that we are really not concerned with Protestantism or mainstream religions anymore. And I said to myself, well, what are you concerned about to begin with? What are you talking about? Well, he's, of course, talking about this ecumenical movement the Vatican has to unite all religions with them. And it's very dangerous. If you look, we're not going to spend time on that because we don't have time. I do that on other shows. But what I'm getting at is John Paul II said something very interesting that may go over the heads of a lot of people that don't understand what's going on in this country regarding the movement towards a one-world government, a one-world religion. John Paul said, we're not concerned anymore with these Protestant groups, and I surmise the reason is that they are basically in lockstep with the Roman Catholic Church. Secondly, he said, but we are concerned with these splinter Christian groups that break away. And he said it in nice words so you'd get the idea that they just want to talk. But what he said was this. He said, we want to open up a greater dialogue with them, and then we want to get better results. And basically what he's saying is that if you don't step in line, if you criticize us, if you criticize what we're doing, we're going to put an end to it and we're going to use the civil authorities. And I believe that's why these groups, like you've mentioned, have been targeted. And if you'll find the link between all of them, they basically are Bible believers who have different beliefs than the Vatican. And I really believe that's a case that needs to be made. Now, there is another. That's a link I'd like to bring to the show today. Also, it's very interesting that the Alamo Ministry has spoken against the Vatican for over 40 years as a way of showing that the Bibles have been altered. And that is something that should be protected by the Constitution of the United States. Instead, they are persecuted for it. And very few people have come to their aid. I applaud you for doing that. My question to you is this. If we're going to get some justice here in this case, well, we're going to go back to the Alamo case. How long do you think it can take now, knowing what you've done in the past with these kind of lawsuits? How long can we expect to see some action here, whether pro or con to the Alamo case?
We estimated 60 days. That's what we had told the parents to expect it to be 60 days. I feel like it could be less than that, but that's kind of what we told them to expect. In the Heartland case, it was only 6 days, and the reason was because we filed a temporary restraining order because, like I said, we got into that case right from the beginning. In this case, we couldn't do a temporary restraining order because so much time had already passed.
Mm-hmm. So we could see something happen within 60 days. I also believe during this, what do you think, you know, We talk about the legalities of this case and others, but can you tell us what goes on in a child's mind during this time? I think that can be irreparably damaged from this type of treatment, being ripped away from your parents at a young age. It's just sad because this is going on now since September in the Alamo case. What type of damage have you seen that happens to children that have just been kidnapped like this, then returned to their families? Go ahead.
Well, the biggest thing is reactive attachment disorder, which my son also has, and it's very difficult to manage. Usually younger children are more at risk of that. The thing about reactive attachment disorder is it is brain damage. You can see, like, on a PET scan where that part of the brain is damaged. And what will happen, how I usually explain it to parents, is to think of all the pain that they're going through and how they're always waiting for the next hearing. And so, you know, they can make themselves be patient by saying, well, we go to court again on this day or whatever. The children don't understand any of that. And the only way they can really cope with it is by setting that part of their brain down. And that's how they develop reactive attachment disorder. And it's damage in the frontal lobe where you can see there's no activity or there's minimal brain damage. In fact, reactive attachment disorder used to be called minimal brain damage, and they re-termed it to be more politically correct. But mm-hmm. the parents will even tell us things that their kids are doing during visits and stuff, and I will pick up that that's a reactive attachment disorder symptom, but I'm reluctant to say so to them because I don't want them to worry even more.
Now, you have your son Taylor, how's he doing, and how old is he right now?
He's 12. He has numerous issues. He's legally blind, and he's permanently brain injured. He has spastic quadriplegia, so he kind of walks on his toes. And now, at his age, we've had a lot of issues with kids making fun of him on the bus. Some kids dared him to put Germex in his eyes and things like that. And I'm as angry about the whole situation as I was at the time it happened. It's like it never goes away. It never gets better.
And so, basically, he was fine. He was born healthy, taken from you, then abused in foster care, where he had skull fracture, 4 ribs broken, a hip fracture. Were these people ever prosecuted for this action?
Actually, no, because they couldn't prove if the man did it or the woman did it. So,
your son is abused. He's legally blind now, permanently brain damaged, and no one was ever prosecuted for this care, right? For this lack of care.
Excuse me. And at the time, I didn't know much about the law. Like I said, I was learning, and I filed a federal lawsuit while he was still in state custody. Well, the guardian ad litem said, well, she had the right to manage the suit because she was his guardian ad litem. So she took the suit away from me. Then she settled out of court for $100,000, which all went to repay Medicaid for surgeries he only needed because of their abuse.
Man, I'm telling you, what a story. And we know, Cheryl, that this isn't just an isolated case. There are so many cases going on in this country from all over, every state in the union, that we need to do something. And it's great to see your organization step to the plate here and actually try and get this in front of the public, which is quite difficult. Because basically, we have a group of people in this country who have just sold out, basically, to the government, and they think it'll never happen to them. What's your thoughts about that statement?
Statistically, you're 3 times more likely to be the subject of a child abuse investigation than you are to have a flat tire. All of us prepare for having a flat tire, and none of us prepare for having CPS show up at the door.
Yeah, good point. And I'll tell you, they can. You know, one of the interesting things is I've had people on my show who tell me that they can get anonymous. For example, they had an argument with their neighbor, and over some crazy thing about their lawn or their something going on in the neighborhood, and the next thing you know, there's a CPS agent at your doorstep because a complaint has been filed against you, and in cases of 2 or 3 people that were on my show, they were false, but still, you can't even find out who's complained against you. They hold that secret. And basically, they took children based on false complaints. Have you seen that happen?
Right. And in Missouri, we have a law that says the state has to make every effort possible to identify the reporter, including tracing the calls, if available. But they do still allow anonymous reports. And then it's against the law in every state to make an intentionally false report. But we have to turn around and make the police prosecute. We successfully caused that to happen in Iowa, where an ex-wife had reported her ex-husband 28 times, and every time it was unfounded. And we contacted the attorneys, the county attorney, and said we wanted them to press charges for filing a false report. And he refused, and then we turned around and did a GAO complaint. That's the General Accounting Office and the federal government, because that has to be part of the law, the prosecution of false reports, in order to get federal money. So we said, okay, they're getting federal money by fraud because they refused to prosecute false reporters, and they have never prosecuted one. So they suddenly turned around and filed charges against certain prosecutors.
Cheryl, we're all out of time. I want to thank you. I will let people know how to get in touch with you, and thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Cheryl Barnes. Who's trying to help many parents get their children back. We're all out of time on the Investigative Journal. Until tomorrow, good morning.